Hello, and welcome back to my podcast, coming to you from the pirate ship. I'm Aubrey, and this is Sailing Miss Lone Star and Go See the World. Okay, so today I'm going to jump into frequently asked questions. You guys have been asking me to do this for a while. It's been a little while since I've made a podcast, and now I'm back. We're doing this huge refit on the 51 Formosa that we're very excited about. We just got back from the Bahamas, and we did a refit on a 37.5 Hunter Legend. We took the proceeds from the sale of that, and we bought new masts and rigging for this Formosa. So we're super excited to get out there, and we're looking to head straight to Mexico. The original plan was to actually head up to Alaska, but as those of you on boats know, it takes a little bit longer than we plan usually, like three times as long. So anyway, let me jump right into this frequently asked questions. So I get this one all the time. Tell me about your background. When did you start sailing, and what did you do before you started sailing? So that's a good one. Well, I always tell people this, which is a jaw dropper. The first time I was ever on a boat in the ocean was the day that I moved aboard, which is kind of crazy, but if you know me, then it makes sense. It's kind of part of my personality. Once I decide to do something, I'm doing it. And if it doesn't work out, we can always make an adjustment. So I always tell the kids, you know, you can fix anything but death. So long as you're here and breathing on this earth, there is always a solution and there's always a way to make lemons into lemonade. So that's kind of the way that I looked at it when I moved on the boat. I was like, you know what? If it doesn't work out, I'll just change. I'll buy my couch back and I will move into a house. So that's how I started. I had no sailing experience. I'd never been on the ocean in a boat before, which is kind of crazy. I love the ocean, but because of my fear of water, I've just kind of avoided it. So it was a combination of conquering my fear and just this deep need to explore. So that is how I wound up on a boat. Now, before that, in my early 20s, I was doing a little bit of modeling, and I was also in real estate. What else? I've done so many things. So when the real estate market crashed in 2008, I had Bianca. Thought it was a good time to become a mom since the real estate market wasn't doing so well. So after that, I became a photographer and I opened a photography studio. Now I'm giving you the cliff notes. There's a much longer story and we'll get into that in a different podcast. But I grew up on a farm, and so kids and pets and all of that stuff have always been just a huge part of my life. So that's kind of what I focused on in my photography studio, was kids, pets, families. I got into weddings, which is eventually what got me out of photography, because the wedding business is hard. There's a lot of pressure, and it's not just the difficulty, it's the dissatisfaction of most brides, because they've built up this day to be absolutely perfect in their mind, and if anything goes wrong, it's usually a huge disappointment, and oftentimes not my fault, it's just Murphy. So I always say shit rolls downhill, and as a photographer, you're kind of standing at the bottom. So that's a bummer. And I wasn't enjoying it as much as my newborn photography and portraiture. So then when the time came that this opportunity presented itself to go sailing, I was like, you know what? I'm going to sell my studio. I'm going to move to a different town. I'm going to explore the world. And that's what I did. So there's more to that. And like I said, we'll get into that on another day. But that's my background. And once I started sailing, I still had this need for a creative outlet. So I started taking pictures and I started writing a blog. I've been working on a book for a long time. And I reached out to some publishers and they said, well, you're going to need a platform to sell this book. I mean, everyone is self-publishing, and you really need an audience in order to have a successful book. So we're like, okay, well, first on the to-do list, I'm gonna start writing a blog and use my photography skills and build that up, and then hopefully the people reading my blog will buy my book. So that's how the first blog was born. So after that, I started dabbling in video for my family, and that's the thing that ended up taking off. So here we are on YouTube, however many years later, and I'm still now working on my book, but YouTube has really taken a lot of my time and effort, so I've kind of put that on hold. But now I do have a bit of a platform to sell a book. I just need to get it on paper. So right now I'm about 80,000 words into it, and it's like that thing that, it's like a wedding. You build it up in your mind for so many years and it has to be perfect, which has kind of stalled my creativity. So that's where I'm at with that. That's how the YouTube started. That's where I came from. And that brings us to the next question. What's your favorite destination you've traveled so far? Wow, these are all over the board. I would have to say Nimba, which is off of East Africa. It's so beautiful there and so uninhabited by tourists. You really have to work hard to get there. Between the parasite that I picked up and the awful sail that I took, it was definitely a trek and a journey to get out there. But once we were there, it was really some of the most stunning sailing that I've done. It was beautiful. The water was clear. The people were so kind. And I really enjoyed that. That was very, very pretty. You can check out that season on Sailing Wild Africa. I think it's on, I know it's on Vimeo and it's still on YouTube. So go make sure to check that out on Sailing Miss Lone Star. What's the next one? Oh, what destination is at the top of your bucket list? Well, I don't know. It depends. Like, I have a few of them. Am I sailing there or am I flying there? I'd really like to go to Tibet. And I would really like to sail Croatia. And I'd also like to sail back to Costa Rica. If you guys have seen the I don't remember what season, I think season 8 on Sailing Miss Lone Star, we did Costa Rica. And that was so beautiful. That's one of our most popular videos. I think there's 20 million views on that right now, which is insane. But the location was just so beautiful. So as we head down to Mexico, we'll see how that goes. And we might just keep shooting on down to Costa Rica because it's one of my favorite places. When was my first crossing and my longest crossing? I get that a lot. My first crossing, I guess it depends on what you consider a crossing. My first crossing was probably also my longest crossing, which was about a week. And we started in the north of the Caribbean and headed down to Central America on a catamaran. And that was run by a captain named Bruce out of Australia. And that's season four. And we were packed full of girls on a catamaran, and that was really fun. Catamarans are not the most comfortable, I think, sailing because of the cadence in the water. So I did get a little seasick. Everyone got a little seasick, but we had a really great time. At that point in that sail, learned that I actually didn't know how to sit with myself, because once you're offshore, there's that quiet and there's no cell phone reception. There's all the things you didn't say to people before you left, and your mind just really runs. And if you are on a small boat with crew, you usually have watches by yourself, and then on the off time, everyone else is sleeping or kind of doing their own thing. So there is a lot of isolation there. And from that, I learned that I really need to work on mastering being still. And that's been one of my main goals in sailing, a personal goal, is to find peace with sitting with self. And that is, I think, a journey that we're all on, whether we know it or not. And sailing really lends itself to learning that lesson. So that wasn't part of the question, but that's definitely what that long passage makes me think of. How do you prepare for a long crossing? Me personally, I start cooking everything. I will cook and freeze things because it's so nice to have a nice hot homemade meal when you're out there. And yes, you have these aspirations to cook and to kind of get in the groove of things, but you really don't know what the sea state's gonna be. And you know, I'm usually responsible for planning the routes and also cooking and planning out our meals and things like that. So I like to get a lot of it done ahead of time. And as you get further and further into the trip, obviously you have less and less fresh food. So freezer space is really cool to have. And on this boat, we're actually going to do a big freezer space right below where I'm sitting, a deep freezer. So that way we can make lots of soups and pre-made stuff and throw it into the oven. That is actually just in the galley here right behind the camera and recorder. So we have to get a new oven. The oven isn't working, and that's just such a huge luxury to have on a boat. Now, this boat is huge for me. I was living on a 29-foot boat for years, and this is a 51 Formosa, which has a really wide beam, and it's kind of like a little condo. So we have all the amenities, and it's been just a real treat. Let's see, what's next? What's the biggest lesson you've learned while sailing? Well, there's been many, but the one that comes to mind first is that you really find out what people are made of when you get into tough situations. So it's not about being the biggest or the strongest or the smartest. It's definitely about keeping your cool, because once you get out onto the ocean, there's no calling AAA, there's no roadside assistance, there's no one's coming to get you. And the realization of that is really hard on some people, and they crumble, and other people really rise to the occasion. And it's hard to know who you will even be as a person until you're put in that situation. And personally, in the experiences that I've been in, I've been really proud of myself for not being the person to crumble, to rise up, and to have the kind of stress and deal with the kind of stress that makes you better. So I always say there's two types of stress. There is the stress that makes you old, like death and divorce and moving, and the stress that makes you better, which is like sailing and the challenges that we face in life. So you definitely learn what people are made of out here, which is, it's scary and it's also really cool. So when I take on new crew and you have the big tough guys or the quiet girl in the corner, or, you know, vice versa, you can't really guess who's gonna be, you know, salty, if you will, and really come through for you and have that courage and that bravery and that level-headedness. You just have to kind of see. And hopefully people aren't tested, but it's the ocean and usually we are. Sometimes it's scary, sometimes it's not so scary, but there's always challenges out there. There's always something that's going to break, and it's always different. So becoming an expert, I feel, is really impossible with sailing. You can become a more experienced sailor and be better at dealing with the things that are presented to you, but being an expert is so hard. It's like being an expert doctor. It's always a different patient, always a different ailment, and it's the same with the ocean and the boat. It's always something different that breaks in a different sea state with a different crew. And so you just have to keep a level head and really, I don't even know how to describe it, but rise to the occasion and not crumble. So that is one of the things that I have learned as a lesson, many, many lessons, but that's the first one that comes to mind. What's your number one tip for new sailors? New sailors, just get out there and do it. Don't worry about flogging the sails. Don't worry about bumping into the dock. I always worry about bumping into the dock. Just get out there and try it. Do it. You know, your boat is sailing typically about as fast as you can walk. So go out there, zip around in the bay, and just try it. Don't worry about making mistakes. Don't worry about looking foolish. Just go out there and try, and you'll build your confidence. And confidence in sailing is, well, well-placed confidence in sailing is probably one of the biggest things. And I think that's why sometimes men tend to seem to do better than women, because that confidence is something they definitely fake until they make it. And women tend to be more, you know, planners, and we tend to be more concerned about things and have a little bit less of an ego when we go out there, which can sometimes handicap us because we overplan and worry before we just get out there and do it. And my biggest advice is just get out there and do it. And if you're really nervous, go out in 4 or 5 knots of wind and flog those sails and practice your sail trimming and just go slow and just do it. Just do it. That is my biggest piece of advice. What's the most unexpectedly difficult thing about the sailing lifestyle? Wow. Well, it's definitely tiny living. One of the things that I've noticed that when I meet people that are not in the sailing community, they think it's super cool. They're like, wow, what a neat lifestyle. This is so brave for you to get out there. I wish I could do that. I've always dreamt of just leaving everything and going sailing. And then when you get into the thick of it and the reality of it, the people in the industry, like people that own the boatyards and docks and you know, different professional people out there that you'll find in the marine industry, actually look down on the people that live on boats. They look at you like you're a hobo, which is it's a little bit shocking and surprising to me, because in my life I've been a professional and I haven't typically been treated like that. Like I'm a freeloader, or that, you know, I'm gonna make a mess, or I'm gonna, you know, there's just like a negativity kind of around it when you're around certain people. So it's definitely something that surprised me. I don't know that it's the most difficult. Probably one of the most difficult things is that now you're paying attention to everything that you do. I mean, the trash that you produce, the water that you use, how many times the toilet's been flushed, what the weather's going to be like that day, whether you're sailing or not. You're just really clued in to everything around you so much more than you are when you're living in a land-based home. Like, you flush the toilet, it just goes away and you never see it again. You turn the water on and it just runs forever. And if you don't turn it off, it'll just keep going. And so in the sailing lifestyle, we really have to pay attention to what we're using and how we're using it, which I think is a blessing and also a difficulty. I think it has made me feel more alive and more in tuned with, you know, what's going on in my sphere or on my little island that I call my boat. So it's difficult, and it's a positive and a negative. So that's kind of, I mean, I'm sure I could think of a lot more difficult things, but that's kind of the everyday difficulty that I would say new sailors would find a little bit shocking. Let's see. Where did you get the inspiration to start learning to sail? Well, that's an interesting one. I actually started out on a powerboat, and I started in Kima, Texas, and we took it through the Gulf of Mexico, down the panhandle of Florida, around to Isla Mirada. And at the time, I was with Rob, and he had this dream to live on his powerboat in the Bahamas, which in hindsight would have been a great idea. But I started to, you know, pull out the big charts and look at how far you can actually go on a tank of gas. And it's about 900 miles, give or take, on any reasonable size boat is about what you can get. And 900 miles was a little bit short. I wanted to go a little bit further. So I started really looking into sailing, and I started watching YouTube channels. And the idea of just having the security of never needing fuel. I mean, now I know that you sometimes need fuel to get into docks and things, but not to be caged by the need for fuel. And there was this idea of freedom, and it really inspired me to want to learn how to sail. So I started getting on other people's sailboats. I started, you know, asking questions and trying to learn. And, you know, I came up with this little saying, and I say it all the time now to people. I go, idiots have been sailing for thousands of years, which is true. Idiots have been sailing for a long time. And if the Vikings can sail, which they were great sailors, on those little dugout boats, if people have been sailing for so long, why can't I do it? If someone else can do it, I can do it too. And yes, it may take me more time or more effort, but if another human being can do it, so can I. And so that was kind of, that was my inspiration to myself, my self-talk. And I just really wanted to go far and see everything. And I still do. So that was my inspiration to start sailing. What is your biggest intimidation in the lifestyle? I know this sounds silly, but docking the boat next to other expensive boats. I want to be a master at it, and we can kind of circle back to just go out there, go slow, and go try it. This feels like such a handicap and just freezes me. I get so nervous. Also, everyone's always watching. I feel like there's always an audience on the dock, you know, arms folded, corn pipe, talking about how they would do it. armchair quarterbacks, and I just get so nervous. So that really intimidates me. Big seas and storms and things like that, I mean, these boats are built to withstand a lot, and as long as you stay on the boat, you are typically gonna be okay. So it's docking. I know this sounds silly, but that's the truth. How long does it usually take to do a boat flip? Well, that is an interesting question. I don't really know how to answer that. It depends on, obviously, what boat you buy. You know, are you pricing it low or high? Did you finish all the work? You know, men and women buy things differently. And usually a married couple is buying a boat. Typically you'll have a husband and wife come in. Not every time, but you know, you have to kind of plan for that. And you want the engine compartment to look good and clean and run and fire up, and the varnish inside to look beautiful and the galley to look beautiful, so you can kind of make both parties happy. Another big thing, which I think is really funny, is when people are buying boats, they always mention the smell. They're like, man, it smelled like a boat, or, oh gosh, I couldn't live with that smell. So just making a boat smell nice goes a long way, which I think is really funny. When I walk into a boat to buy a boat for a flip, nothing really scares me. I don't really like doing coring on the deck, like soft decks, I don't want anything to do with. I'm not great at woodwork. Searle's getting better and better at woodwork, so I shy away from a little bit of that. Fiberglass, no big deal. Electrical, no big deal. Blackwater plumbing, I get T-Rex arms. So I digress, but how long does it take to do a boat flip? It really depends. There isn't a great answer for that. It just kind of what the market's doing, what boat you're picking up, and how you're pricing it. So let's see. How do you choose what boat to flip and where to start? Well, I have to say they just kind of speak to me, and you really have to pay attention to the market. So right around the 38 to 42 foot boat, I think is a really great range to stay in, because it's big enough to live on. It's big enough to go far in other people's eyes. I mean, you can take any boat anywhere. You can take a dugout canoe across the Atlantic if you want. I have a friend that did it. But, you know, I think your typical market wants something within that range. And then, you know, you got to look at things that are going to cost a lot of money to add, like stainless steel is very expensive, electronic package is very expensive. And so it's better to have all of those systems in place on a boat when you purchase it, and then just work on them and bring them kind of up to snuff. That would be my advice there. But it's a lot of hard work, so you got to definitely roll up your sleeves. How did you decide where to draw the line between what you share on social media and what you keep private? Wow, that's a really tough one. I really like to have a lot of transparency with you guys and tell you how I'm feeling and what I'm going through and what the plan is and when plans change, and just really be open about the trajectory of life and how I'm experiencing that. And that's been kind of the joy of sharing. But it is hard when there's things that I haven't fully processed, when I'm struggling with something and I'm not ready for public opinion, that's when I choose to keep things private. But once I've processed things and I know who I am and where I stand and how that aligns with my moral compass and my family and things, then I'm more open to share, because then it doesn't really matter the opinions of others, because I know how I feel. So I definitely have to say that when I'm not done processing something or I haven't made a decision, then I usually keep things private. So I know you guys have seen me go through a couple breakups, and when Rob and I broke up, it took me probably 4 or 5 months to come out about that. I was completely blindsided by what happened with Rob. And for those of you who don't know, Rob was the person that I started sailing with, or started boating with. He's the one that got me into the lifestyle. And he was a retired veteran. And he also had PTSD. And at the time, I didn't know this, but he was dealing with some bipolar and schizophrenia. So he started drinking and got off of his medication, and there was an altercation. And after that, we went our separate ways, which was really hard for me because I really loved him. And I just never saw it coming. He was great before he got off of his medication. He ended up taking his own life, which was very sad. And it took me a long time to process all this. I think I felt like a lot of it was my fault. And I just kind of hid, and I deleted 2 seasons on YouTube. And I just didn't want, I wanted a big bubble for myself to kind of process what had happened. And it's, you know, now, several years later, it's now just a time where I can talk about it. So when you put yourself out there in the public eye, it's hard to know what you're not going to be okay with talking about. So that has been really interesting. I've really learned a lot about myself and what I can and can't handle and what actually bothers me. Usually when somebody says something or makes a comment that really makes me feel bad, it's actually something I have an insecurity about, or maybe I believe, and then I can unpack it and grow. So it's been a bit of a tool. So yeah, that's kind of how I choose. And so I don't really have a hard line on what I decide to share and what I don't share. So that's been interesting. And I think as you guys go out there, and a lot of you want to start YouTube channels and start sharing your life, I think, to set those parameters and those boundaries ahead of time are helpful. And then just follow your heart, you know? I mean, for as much as I really love sharing with you guys, if I'm not ready and it's not healthy for me, then I wait. And eventually I come around and I'm ready to talk. So yeah, it's been a journey. It has definitely been a journey. So I hope you guys enjoyed this little segment of frequently asked questions. I'm going to get back to the normal programming of podcasts, and I'm very excited. I love doing these with you guys. If you have any topics of discussion that you would like to hear about, please send me an email at misslonestaradventure@gmail.com. If you'd like to see these videos on YouTube, go to Sailing Miss Lone Star on YouTube or on Vimeo. All right, you guys, I will see you next time on Go See the World podcast.